Ian, thanks so much for joining us. How do you look at this game, just kind of in a general sense? It seems like the Patriots are, I don't want to say they're down, because here they are again in their usual spot, but most people seem to think they're a little down, and the Chargers may even have a better roster.
Yeah, guys, it's definitely a different narrative than in previous years with the Patriots. Yes, they're in the same spot that they always are, hosting a divisional game, but they did it in a different way. There were so many hiccups along the way this season, so I think that's added some fuel to this storyline that the beginning of the end is near for the Patriots. Look, you don't buy into that until you actually see it with your own two eyes. They always seem to come through this time of year on their home field, and the challenge for Los Angeles will be the same challenge that every team has faced going into Gillette, and that's winning in January in a place where New England always seems to feast. They find ways to win. It's not always lopsided, but crucial moments, pressure situations, Tom Brady with a different cast of characters, they've done it time and time again. You know, I think the one difference this year, guys, and you've seen it, you've been around it to notice, I don't think this Charger team looks at the past and uses that as any kind of indicator of who they are now.
Yeah.
Different coaching staff, certainly a different vibe around the team, obviously a new home completely in Carson. So my general feelings in covering the Chargers this year is the past is the past, and they're trying to write a new chapter.
I you bring up January, and for most of the country, maybe aside from San Diego, January brings some cold weather. And in the past, and I know the Chargers aren't looking at their past games in Foxborough as a gauge, but typically West Coast teams struggle when they go to cold
yep.
weather. But this team seems to be built a little bit differently. Would you agree?
Oh, no doubt about it. Their running game has been more effective, and they're not just basing it on normal straight line runs. They're very good to the outside, but that's with a healthy Gordon. And
yeah.
right now, after watching the game last week, I was there in Baltimore to call that one. He didn't have that extra gear. You didn't see the explosiveness. And obviously, we didn't see it in the last month of the year because of various injuries for Gordon. Eckler never quite got it going last week against the Ravens. Give credit to the Baltimore defense, one of the top flight defensive units in the NFL. But just going off of what I saw final month of the year, the offense for L.A. was not as dynamic
yeah.
as it had been in previous weeks. Is that concern, or is that just how it works in the NFL? You can't just generate 400 yards of offense by snapping your fingers. I think this game could let us see a little bit of what we saw earlier in the year. New England has been vulnerable. That secondary, they've got some big names, but they've meshed in some younger players there. You don't know how they're going to hold up under the playoff lights. And for as good as New England has been defensively over the years, I wouldn't call this particular unit one that would stack up with previous Bill Belichick defenses.
Ian Eagle is going to call the Patriots-Chargers game right here on 97.3 The Fan for Westwood One on Sunday, joining us here on Gwynn and Chris. Ian, I was wondering if you could take us just a little bit behind the scenes for a second. I know that the TV broadcasters, and you do a lot of games on television as well, normally get a chance to meet with the coaches kind of in a one-on-one setting before a game. I just was curious, is a one-on-one setting meeting with Bill Belichick different than any other coach in the NFL or every other coach in the NFL?
Yeah, it is different. Definitely not going to get a whole lot on his team. he just doesn't give it up, and that's his right not to. Most coaches, you ask them about their players, and they'll go on and on. And it may not be completely insightful information, but it's certainly things that you can use on a broadcast and for background scouting reports. Bill will be very short when it comes to talking about his players. You ask him about the opponent, he'll go on and on. You ask him about the officiating, he'll go on and on. You ask him about the history of the game, you could be there for 40 minutes. Those are things that he likes to talk about, but they're not necessarily items that are going to pop up in a game broadcast. So you pick and choose your spots. We had, I want to say, 6 New England games this year, and because of that, you do build a rapport. But as far as access and information, that's not necessarily what you're expecting out of those one-on-one sessions. Pleasant and, you know, certainly open to answering your questions, but he's just not going to go beyond the surface when it comes to anything that could put his team in some kind of information jeopardy.
And this matchup is going to have one quarterback that's considered the GOAT, the other one certainly considered to be a Hall of Famer right now.
Yep.
With Philip Rivers, is with a win against Tom Brady, who he's 0-7 going into this game against Tom, would this do anything else to heighten the legacy that he's already established?
Yeah, I think it would, and maybe that's not fair. I think he's done enough. If we're just talking about Hall of Fame today, I believe he gets in. The numbers, the leadership skills, his love of the game, what he meant over the course of his now 15-year career, and we believe he's going to play at least another couple of years in the NFL. All of those are going to check the boxes necessary to be in Canton. But look, you guys know it, I know it. These are the moments where you can curb some of the naysayers.
Yeah.
And there are naysayers. I mentioned early in the season, I'm not a Twitter guy. I don't have an account. I must say, I have a burner account, so I can pay attention to what's going on. I have to be in the know.
That might be the smartest move right there.
That's good.
Thanks. Thanks very much. Trust me, it's not something I just came to overnight. I thought about this long and hard. And the reality was, I brought up the Hall of Fame with Philip Rivers early in the season, and I said it, to be honest, in a very cavalier way. I thought it was just understood,
right,
that he would be in the Hall of Fame. And then I happened to look at some of the mentions about the broadcast, and that caught a little fire in one of the games we did early in the season. How can you say that? How can you assume that? I'm thinking, really? Are there really people out there that haven't seen the body of work? But yeah, that's how it is. That's part of the reason why we love sports, and people have their opinions. And I would tell you definitively, a win here would help the legacy a bit, but I don't think it changes the final result. I think he'll be wearing a gold jacket.
Ian, get you out on this. Appreciate your time so much, and look forward to your broadcast on Sunday. And I don't know if you have a pulse of this at all, but having covered many Charger games this year, I mean, how do you feel for San Diegans who are watching this game Sunday? I can tell you from our program alone that most of the fans here are really, really in love with this Charger team. They don't want to admit it, but they still love them, because they haven't been gone long enough and there's still that connection to Philip Rivers. Is there any sense that a win here means something to America's finest city?
Yeah, I fully understand and acknowledge the mixed emotions that go into this. I've been doing Nets games for 25 years, and to me it's not a parallel comparison, but it's enough to at least have an understanding of the circumstances. They were in New Jersey for the first 19 years that I did the games, and now for the last 6, they've been in Brooklyn. It wasn't a huge change. It's only an 11-mile difference between where they used to play and where they play now, but in New York traffic, you might be looking at an hour or an hour and 15 minutes trying to weave your way through Manhattan and then through Brooklyn. I don't think the connection was there with the New Jersey fans as the connection was there with the Charger fans and the community in San Diego. That ran deeper. There were more Charger fans in San Diego than there were Net fans in the state of New Jersey. So when the team moved, it wasn't this seismic shift where fans had to pick a side. There were a bunch of fans that stuck with the team, and they can still watch it in their local market, and if they want to go to a few games, they can, and they've now been able to build a new fan base. This San Diego move to Carson and eventually to L.A., it cuts deeper. And I don't know if a win changes some of those opinions of people that decided, I can't do it, I can't commit myself to it. I do know, and echoing your statements, this is a really likable team.
Yeah.
This is a likable head coach. He does it his way. He's not copying some other coach. He's not trying to be someone else. They made an excellent hire. Anthony Lynn has understood what this team needed and when they needed it, and a straight shooter. And this roster has been built the right way. Tom Telesco has done an outstanding job. The defense needed help. He addressed it. The first four picks in the 2018 draft were all defensive picks, and they recognized that they had to get better on that side of the ball. He shored up the offensive line. Phillip Rivers has been rejuvenated with this group. Hunter Henry returns. That's a great storyline. So how much of an effect that has on the swing vote, I do think a win has a way of healing some of those wounds. And there might be some fans out there that if this thing really is a magic carpet ride, they're going to jump on board.
No question. You're absolutely, you got it nailed right on the head, Ian. But the funny thing is we're all still kind of excited to see where it's going to go if they were able to take it even further, because we really don't know the answer to that. Enjoy the broadcast Sunday. We'll look forward to listening. Appreciate your time.
Thanks, Ian.
Yeah, great to talk to you guys. Have fun this weekend.
What's new? Kidding.
It's now time for the most electrifying segment in sports radio. Gwen and Chris go through the best of the rest in the Big Five. Number five.
Now I can't find my thing.
Is that what you were gesturing about?
No.
Okay, wait a second. That's got to be a promo. Now I can't find my thing?
All right.
Yes.
Write it down. That's gonna,
Will, mark that, please.
Scravy.
That's going to have to be a promo.
No idea where it went. No idea where my sound went.
I have an idea where it is.
Oh, but you still have your questions. You just don't know where your sound went.
Yeah.
Okay.
No idea where it went. It was just there. I just played it. Anyway, I'm really perturbed.
Well, you were perturbed before the segment started.
I'm perturbed about everything right now.
You guys haven't noticed.
I was going
to
play.
I love to laugh, so don't mind me laughing all the time.
Oh, yeah. Don't worry about that.
I hate when I don't know what he's perturbed about, though.
You don't want to know.
I do want to know. I care.
So I was going to play you a highlight of UCLA beating Oregon last night, 87-84 in overtime. It was a pretty good game. They came back from down, I believe, 9 or 10 late in the game, and then they end up winning in overtime. But
what sport was this, Scrabby?
College basketball.
Oh.
87-84.
Could have been water polo or something.
That's a high-scoring water polo game. And it was, well, if I would have had my highlight, I would have said, you heard that right here on 97.3 The Fan, but I didn't have it. Anyway, the UCLA fans are saying that the Bruins are now playing well because they fired Steve Alford a few weeks ago. And since firing Alford, the Bruins are 3-0. So, Tony, was he the problem all along?
Well, he certainly was a part of the problem. And it may not be. I mean, it's three games. Let's see how the rest of the season shakes out. UCLA could go on to lose the rest of these games the rest of the season. So, and then you would think that Alford wasn't the problem. So we'll find out. They certainly are playing better basketball. I've watched the last two games that they played prior to yesterday or last night's, and they're playing some better basketball. So, you know, maybe a new voice has come in, and these young men have decided this is the guy they want to lay it on the line for.
Chris?
They almost set an all-time NCAA record last night because they were down 9 points with 1 minute to play in the game, and they forced overtime. According to ESPN stats, it's the sixth largest final minute comeback in history. So, but I do want to say that it was all Alford's fault, yes, because I really can't stand Alford. And I love the fact that
I knew there was a catch to that.
Yeah, I love the fact that he underachieved, messed up that program, and then leaves, and now we see just how good that program could have been. But Tony's right. A lot of times a new voice comes in, everybody kind of pays a little closer attention to everything, and you pick up a couple of wins. The real test is whether you can keep it going.
Chris, why don't you like Coach Alford?
When he was at New Mexico and they were playing the Aztecs, there were a couple of instances of poor behavior by Alford that I kind of remember.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
I told you about them, actually.
I think I remember that, yes.
Yeah. I think he's got a little – he still carries a little Bobby Knight around with him. And it's
tough
not
to shake it.
It's not to my liking.
Number four.
Former Stanford running back Bryce Love announced that he actually tore his ACL in a win against Cal on December 1st. NFL Network's Ian Rappaport reported, quote, "The timeline would give Bryce Love a chance to be ready for the beginning of the 2019 season, but clearly a difficult reality for one of the top backs," end quote. If you remember, he passed up the NFL draft last year to come back for his senior season at Stanford. So, Chris, do you think that his decision to play his senior year instead of declaring for the draft is now going to cost him millions?
Yeah, it probably is going to cost him millions. But I don't disagree with what he did. I still think anytime you're kind of on the fence and you're at Stanford, you got a chance to get that kind of a degree and that kind of, you know, that kind of experience, life experience. I think Bryce Love made the right move. Did it end up costing him some money? Yeah, but he'll make plenty wherever it is he signs, and he will have a chance once healthy to show what he can do, you know, as a running back in the National Football League. But there's no question Bryce Love's senior season has to be considered a bit of a failure. I mean, when they opened the season against the Aztecs, he was the Heisman Trophy favorite, and he obviously was nowhere to be found by the end of the season. So, yeah, he cost himself some money, but that doesn't mean that everybody should leave as soon as their junior year is over to go to the NFL.
Yeah, and if you remember, the Aztecs, I believe, held him to below 30 yards. So they kind of started the trend of Bryce Love not being very good this year. Tony, what do you think? Do you think it cost him a lot of money coming back?
Yeah, it's definitely going to cost him money coming back. But that doesn't mean he regrets his decision. I think.
I couldn't ask you guys that because it can't be in his head.
Right. I mean, you don't regret something like that when you have a Stanford education to fall back on. I think that's a game changer. I think a lot of guys, depending on the school they're at, may want to jump in there, but sometimes...
Does anyone hear that?
I definitely hear it. I've been hearing it.
Have you heard that, Chris?
It sounded like we just ran outside into the wind tunnel.
It's been happening like all show, and I've been thinking I'm crazy.
There it is again.
I have no idea what that is.
But anyway, I think ultimately, like Chris said, he'll have a chance to make that money back.
Number three.
Duke star Zion Williamson has taken college basketball by storm this year and is getting high praise from coaches around college basketball. Florida State's head coach Leonard Hamilton said about Zion Williamson, quote, "He's the most phenomenal talent in the ACC since Michael Jordan." Tony, do you agree with that statement?
Man.
Since Michael Jordan?
That's what he said.
That was 1984. So that's a lot of guys.
That's a lot of guys. I mean, you got to think who came through the ACC. Tim Duncan, Vince Carter. And I'm forgetting people. James Worthy.
Throwing some names
I'm just throwing
names.
I'm going to say no. I'm going to say no. Only because of the guys I just named in front of them.
Yeah.
That all went on to have Hall of Fame careers. One of them is the GOAT in my mind. Michael Jordan.
Michael Goat Jordan.
We can call him Michael Goat Jordan. But yeah, it's high praise. And listen, Zion Williamson is a really good player, but I'm not ready to put him up there yet.
Chris,
I agree. Too early to put him ahead of every single player that's come out of the ACC in the last 37 years.
Chris Paul, I forgot about him too.
I mean, there are Hall of Fame players that have come out of the ACC after Michael Jordan and before Zion Williamson, and we'll see. I think I've heard kind of mixed reports. Some people say they think he'll be the next LeBron James. Some people say that's a ludicrous comparison. So,
I think it is.
You know, we'll just have to wait and see. But, no, I can't put him ahead of the entire ACC over the last 35 years.
He's going to have to watch his weight as he gets older. He's already 275 right now at the age of 18.
Number two.
We've talked about the NFL head coaching hires, and one thing that stood out to me is that Only one of the fired head coaches ended up with a head coaching job. Steve Wilks, Dirk Cutter, Todd Bowles, and others are all accepting coordinator jobs, but Adam Gase was the only first-time fired coach to get another head coaching job. Chris, why do you think Adam Gase is the one guy who got another chance at head coach?
Because he's a genius.
He's a genius.
And he proved it over the last 3 years with the Miami Dolphins. I have no idea how he was able to get a job so quickly, and I'm not quite sure what he did to deserve a head coaching job so quickly. You know, one playoff in 3 seasons is mediocre. Under 500 record, not even mediocre. Somehow Adam Gase has a good press agent who has people thinking that he is a genius. And the Jets have bought into that, thinking that, you know, everybody thinks he's one of these guys that can just take a quarterback and make him a superstar. And I think you guys have kind of made fun of the whole Tannehill situation, but if that's what you're going by, you think he's going to turn Sam Darnold into what? The next Ryan Tannehill? That's not any good.
No,
you'd be pretty
not.
Pissed off if you wasted out your number one pick on that.
Right.
Tony, what do you think? Why do you think Adam Gase got a head coaching job so quickly?
I really don't know. I honestly don't know how he got another coaching job that fast, considering the guys who all got fired. And, you know, he out of the guys who got fired, he probably was the, at least record-wise, was the best of those coaches. But I don't have an answer for why he got a job, like, literally a couple weeks after he lost his first one.
Maybe not even a week.
Might have been a week and a half, right.
Number one.
The Red Sox and star outfielder Mookie Betts agreed on a record-setting contract today, according to a couple reports. Betts settled with the Red Sox on a $20 million deal for 2019. According to ESPN's Jeff Passan, the two sides, they avoided arbitration, and last year he earned $10.5 million. Passan also said that the $20 million salary is higher than any previous deals for players in their second or third year of eligibility for arbitration, and Betts was in his second year of eligibility. So, Tony, is this a good or bad thing for the potential of a strike in a couple years?
Mookie! Do I think it's a good or bad thing in regards to strike? I think it's the one part of the system that's working the way it was designed. Arbitration was put in place because teams already had the rights to you, or you couldn't go anywhere for the first 6 years. This was the way for those guys to get a pay increase, and it works. I mean, when you go out and you produce at a high level like Mookie Betts has or Nolan Arenado, that's the type of money you can make. But other than that, there's something broken in the whole system as far as free agency, the tax that happens to teams when they spend too much money. The teams have been able to kind of go out and found in a roundabout way to kind of hijack the system a little bit.
Chris, what do you think?
Does the signing of Mookie Betts
is him earning $20 million
decrease the chance of a strike in a few years?
No, it just is.
No, yes. I don't think so. I think it's, as Tony said, I mean, he deserves the kind of payday he's getting, but I still think by a large margin, most players are feeling like the owners are holding out.
The top players are going to get what they're going to get. There's no stopping that.
Yeah, so you're going to have the cream of the crop, like 10 guys get all the money that they're going to get, but there's still another 600 rank-and-file players that are not going to be happy with the way the system's going right now. And unless that changes, look, Tim Kirkjian came on yesterday. He's a lot smarter than I am, and he said he's pretty concerned about a strike. Yeah. So that's good enough for me, and I don't think the signing of Mookie Betts changes that.
That's all for the Big Five from Gwynn and Chris on 97.3 The Fan.
We are very fortunate to be joined by a guy who knows a whole lot about NFL playoff football. Ed McCaffrey starred in the NFL as a wide receiver for the Denver Broncos and others, and he joins us here on 97.3 The Fan. Ed, how you doing today?
I am doing great. How about yourself?
Outstanding. We're excited about playoff football coming up. I thought before we get to that, though, we'd just congratulate you on the year that your son had, Christian McCaffrey in Carolina. I mean, I don't know. How do you? Tony's the son of a legend. You're now the father of a guy who's becoming a legend. How does that work? How's that feel?
Yeah, you know, I got 4 boys. They all play football. Falls are pretty busy for me. Christian had a ton of fun. out in Carolina, but he's a, you know, he's a wee guy, and they were a little bummed that they couldn't get into the playoffs. Got off to such a great start at 6-2 early in the season, and then, man, I mean, they were just, in my opinion, they were a much better team than their final record, but they let a couple of games slip away, and there's a lot of parity in the NFL. There's a lot of competition. And so, you know, you gotta find a way to win, bring it every week, and they didn't pile up enough wins to get to postseason. But individually, as a dad, sure, I was proud of him. I thought North Turner did a great job of incorporating him and the other guys into the offense, and, you know, got to catch a few passes, got to run the ball a little bit and have some fun with his teammates. So, unfortunately, ended a little too soon.
And I have to ask you, because much like your son Christian, I'm sure I was in the locker room with my dad a lot. I know Christian probably was in that locker room with you a lot. As you've seen him progress through Stanford and now with the Carolina Panthers, I'm sure the first word that comes to your mind is proud. But tell us a little bit, like, what it's like watching him every Sunday go out and compete at the level that he's competing at.
Yeah, you're right, and you know what it's like. Christian grew up in a locker room with John Elway and Steve Atwater and Shannon Sharpe,
wow,
and Rod Smith, and all those guys, and so he didn't know any better, right?
Right.
And he's playing Power Rangers with Shannon, thinking this is just what normal kids do.
Power Rangers.
And he got to run around under the confetti after our Super Bowl championships, and he just thought that was normal. So you know that feeling of having exposure to that type of a life, and so he's had the dream of playing pro football since he was a little kid, and it's the only thing he's ever wanted to do. So as a dad, you know, I love all my sons. I just want them to be happy. I mean, whether it was football or acting or whether they want to be an engineer or doctor, doesn't matter to me. I just want to support them, and I want them to be happy. So Christian is truly happy playing football. That's absolutely what he loves to do. He doesn't want to do anything else with his life right now, and so I'm happy for him. He's getting to do the things that he loves to do, and you know, I love that he's a great player. He's a lot better player than I ever was. And, you know, there's a lot of pressure on the kids of pro athletes. You know that.
Yeah.
And, you know, you're growing up and it's like, are you going to be as good as your dad? Or, you know, are you even going to play that sport? And, you know, I didn't have to deal with that. So the fact that in light of all of that and all the criticism growing up and all the obstacles he's had to overcome, I'm incredibly proud of him for sticking to what he loves to do, and I'm really excited for him that he has the opportunity to play in the NFL.
That's awesome.
I'm an older guy, so I want to stick up for Ed McCaffrey here. He just said that Christian is far better than he ever was. That very well may one day be true, but Ed, I think you had a pretty remarkable career. I want to get that in there. A couple of Super Bowl championships, the first of which was won right here in San Diego, and I think a tremendous year a tremendous career in the NFL for 9 years with the Broncos and the Giants and 49ers. So don't give Christian the nod quite yet. Not yet. I think
you still have him beat, man.
Yourself.
I don't know. You're aging yourself if you remember me. I figure you got to be at least 25, 30 to even remember that I played at this point. But there's a lot of parents who tell their kids, hey, you know, they remind them who I am. But that's, I'm Christian's dad now. That's who I am. I'm Christian. But, you know, I love football too, man. It's just been in our family. It's crazy. My wife is so strong because we have four boys. They all play football, and every now and again, I feel a little guilty. I'm like, wow, you know, all the four boys and me, and all football, and how many games you've been to. Then I come home thinking we're going to hang out and do something different, and she's got a game on, watching football when I'm not there. So she's just a huge football fan, and thank goodness. And she loves the lifestyle, and she loves that, you know, our sons are able to do what they want to do with their lives. So, but you're aging yourself bringing me up, yeah.
Everybody already knows how old, they all know how old I am.
Yeah,
Ed, I want to ask you about the seems. I know this is a copycat league, but it seems like the new trend right now is a lot of the hirings of the coaches. They're all young. They're all up and coming offensive minds. What are your thoughts on that route that teams are going now?
Yeah, well, except in Denver, where Vic Fangio got hired. He's about 60, I believe.
Right.
But he's older, and they don't hire a lot of older coaches. And sometimes you figure, well, you know, we want to bring new life or new philosophies into our organization. But, you know, a guy like Vic, I mean, he's had some of the best defenses in the history of the league. So at least you know what you're getting there, right? And so these are they go in waves with their mentality and how they hire coaches. And everybody, you remember the Waterboy movie with Adam Sandler, you know, right?
Yes.
And then all of a sudden team signs up the cowboy, you know, it didn't quite work out. It doesn't always work out. Young coaches challenge is that they've never been a head coach before. Maybe they've never been a head coach in the NFL before. And it's different than being a coordinator. You have to delegate responsibility. You have to hire a great staff that you can rely on. It's tough to be a coordinator and a head coach, and you certainly can't be a coordinator for both sides of the ball and be a head coach. So it's a different skill set, and not every great coordinator is ready to be a head coach. But when you find that young, talented, and intelligent coach who's a coordinator and has head coach potential, man, you could probably, you know, have him coach a team 10 or 15 years. And so that's what every organization is hoping for, that they can bring in a young, intelligent coach who's cutting edge, who's one step ahead of the rest of the league, who also has, you know, maybe coordinator potential, but also head coaching potential. And then they, just like when they draft a quarterback in the first round, you're hoping that guy can be with you for a while.
Ed McCaffrey, two-time Super Bowl champion with the Denver Broncos, as our guest. Very happy to have him with us. I want to ask you very quickly about playing with John Elway. It seems like we ask every Charger that we ever have on how it's like to play with Philip Rivers, and if we get somebody from Miami, we ask them what was it like to play for Dan Marino. Maybe I haven't had the good fortune of interviewing a Bronco, but asking what it was like to play for John Elway and what you think he's, you know, up to in Denver. It seems like he's had some success, although the last couple of years haven't gone the way he wanted. But ultimate competitor, ultimate athlete, everything.
Oh, he's the biggest competitor you'll ever meet, and you know that Hall of Fame guys who played and were competitive for a long time. They're great competitors, and obviously he was blessed with some pretty unbelievable skills. You know, he's a throwback quarterback now, right? In that,
yeah,
you know, he didn't play under these new set of NFL rules. They used to try to kill quarterbacks back in the day. He was tough. He was strong. He had a rocket arm. But more than anything, and all of his teammates will tell you this, he was a leader by example, and he was a guy that included everybody. You know, we've heard of those stories of quarterbacks who throw a guy a ball and he'll drop it or run the wrong route, and he's like, get that guy out of there, you know, and kind of talk down to him. John was more of a, hey, let's go do it again. Hey, get back in the huddle. I'm coming right back at you. Matter of fact, that happened to me. Ran a slant route in the first year I was with Denver, and not many got through my hands now, but that one did, and I'm thinking, okay, here it goes. He yelled at by the quarterback. He's like, hey, don't. He like ran and met me about halfway out. Said, hey, don't worry about it. Let's go get it again. Called the same play, same route, threw it right back at me, and thank goodness I caught it. But, you know, he's one of those guys. He made all the people around him better. And, you know, every time I look down at my hand, I see my wedding ring, and I think of my wife, Lisa. And then I look at my knuckle and I think of John Elway. I broke a couple of fingers trying to catch balls that he threw to me because, you know, they used to joke about the cross on your chest from the football. I mean, he threw that thing with some velocity. One of the few quarterbacks, you know, I remember a couple of comeback routes, which are, you know, outside the numbers, 20 yards down the field, coming out of the break where I swear I saw the ball leave his hands and it was on me like in no time. And I'm thinking, not many quarterbacks, you know, had or will ever have that type of skill. But you know, it wasn't just his skill alone that made him so special. It was how he treated his friends, his teammates, his coaches. He truly made our team better just because of the way he carried himself.
Yeah, that might have been due to the 90-plus mile-per-hour fastball that he used to throw, kind of rubbing off on that football. Ed, I want to ask you a little bit. You were named as a part of the executive management team of the Pacific Pro Football League. Can you tell us a little bit about it?
Yeah. So you have to refer to me as Mr. Commissioner from here on out.
I'm sorry, Mr. Commissioner. Could you explain us a little bit about the league?
Well, I'm going to take a step to the side. I'm Mr. Commissioner. I've been a founder of PacPro for a couple of years now, and I'm taking a more active role this year. We're going to kick off in 2020, and for those of you who aren't familiar with the Pacific Pro Football League, we're the first ever professional football league for players not yet eligible for the NFL. And that sounds like a mouthful. Basically, kids out of high school can't play pro football. You can play pro baseball. You know that, right?
Right.
You can go overseas and play pro basketball. Or we heard of a kid that got an internship getting paid $1 million, not playing at all, waiting a year. Or you can go to college, one and done, go pro. And pick any sport. Every other sport in the world, you can go pro right out of high school. And in other countries, because I spent some time overseas in Australia and Italy and some other places, they have club teams from the time the kids are 4 or 6, and
that's
they
right.
grow through the club teams, and then they go pro out of high school. And they don't confuse pro sports with their education or university overseas. And so we're just trying to provide that opportunity. It's kind of hard for me to believe someone hasn't done this a long time ago, but what we're trying to do is create another opportunity for players who are unapologetic about their pursuit of greatness in the sport of football, who want to play professional football, and we'll provide another opportunity for them to do that. So what types of players are right for our league? High school graduates that want to go pro and learn from pro coaches with professional football rules and pro hash marks. I mean, we're coaching the pro game from elite coaches. They'll learn from elite coaches. JC transfers, college transfers, or kids that have decided that they want to play less games in a safer environment, learn from pro coaches, and get ready for the NFL earlier. Because of that three-year rule that is in effect, which simply means players cannot play in the NFL until they're 3 years removed from high school. So there's no other place to play football other than in college right now. And, you know, for every kid is not wired to receive a typical four-year college education. There's kids that want to pursue a vocation or have other interests, but we're a summer league, so you certainly continue to go to school as well. You're not sacrificing your education. Matter of fact, we're paying for their first year of college and helping provide them with mentorship programs and fiscal responsibility programs so that they are prepared for life after football. But our main focus is providing an opportunity for these young men to pursue their dream and play professional football.
You already sound a lot nicer and more realistic than the other guy they call Mr. Commissioner.
You know, I've met with him a few times. He's an awfully nice man in person. He probably gets more flack than he deserves.
A little more flack than he deserves. Ed, thanks so much for the time. Really enjoyed it. I have a bunch more questions for you, but we appreciate your time, and hopefully we'll catch up with you again. As your league gets a little closer, we'd be happy to talk about it and find out what's going on.
Thanks, Mr. Commissioner.
Yeah, let's do it. Thank you. Thanks for having me on the show. We'll do it again sometime.
Coach Quintero, Coach John Quintero, joining Gwen and Chris. Felt like not too long ago you were sitting in this chair right next to me, Coach.
Oh, absolutely. We had a good time this week. Couple of good shows, and Chris, glad you got back from Wyoming without too much of a problem. I've made that trek more than one time, and to get out of Laramie sometimes can be a little bit difficult.
Yeah, and no fun after you get beat too, and then have to go fly through the cold to get back. But it's always, I don't care what road trip I've ever gone on, I always know that I get to come back to San Diego.
Yeah.
It's a big advantage. Big advantage.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
No question about that.
Coaches,
I got to tell you guys a funny story real quick about one time I was broadcast and I'd done the TV game and I had to do a two-hour radio show after an Aztec win on a Monday night. And Dave Marcus, the great Padre
engineer
and I, we walked out about 11 o'clock at night and we had a rental car. Well, the unfortunate thing, while we were in the arena, it snowed. And we didn't have one of those clickers on our keychain that would help us find our car. And we were out there with our bags and arms and trying to pull things off, you know, knock the snow off to find our rental car. And fortunately, we finally found it. But it was something else. I got to tell you, we were a little concerned, to say the least.
Those people that deal with the weather, I feel for them. Sorry.
Right.
All right, Coach.
Oh, no question.
Lolita's has been serving the best Mexican food in San Diego since 1984. We were just talking about 1984. Year the Padres went to the World Series. Time to talk a little high school sports. Thanks to our friends at Lolita's. Coach, we're knee deep into basketball season now, and give us a little update on what's happening around town.
Well, you know, over the holidays there was a lot of great tournaments, no question about it. And we were pretty busy doing talk shows and that, really didn't get out to see a whole lot, but certainly heard about a lot of great performances. And, you know, this week our girls winner was Mackenzie Curtis. She's only a sophomore basketball player out at El Capitan High School, and she put on a tremendous performance. She led her team to the title in the Sweetwater New Year's Classic with a win over Rancho Bernardo in the championship game, 46-36. And on the year, she's averaging 30.5 points a ball game and 10.5 rebounds per game. And the great thing about this young lady, and again, she's only a sophomore, doesn't only score, She also gets her teammates involved. She averages over 5 assists per game and steal and plays a little defense, averaging over 6 steals per game. So Mackenzie Curtis is this week's girls Lolita Student Athlete of the Week, and again from El Capitan High School. And then we got a wrestler, we got a grappler, a real good one out of Rancho Bernardo High School, Nicholas Rizzo. He was competing in the 132-pound weight division of the Mission Hills Invitational, and he won all 4 of his matches, and he won all 4 by pins, and he ended up being selected the tournament's most valuable wrestler. So congratulations to Nicholas Rizzo, a senior wrestler at Rancho Bernardo High School, and Mackenzie Curtis, a sophomore basketball player at El Capitan High School. And there were some incredible performances, really, in a variety of different sports this week. I was looking at girls water polo. I was looking at girls wrestling. And, you know, we named 2 per week, but, you know, we could name 5 or 6 very easily.
Coach, I love the way you do that. You doesn't just go to hoops automatically.
No, he doesn't go to the major sports.
He does. I mean, he gets his hoops in there.
He doesn't
But he
like
gives all the kids some consideration. You know what you do not give any consideration to, though, Coach? And I'd like to see if I can get this changed. Since I have you on the air right now.
Referees?
Yeah, I think we ought to have a referee basketball official of the week. Is there any way I can get that done? Do I have to talk to the ownership at Lolita's? What do I have to do to get a little recognition for the officials?
Well, I think there's 2 things we can do for the officials. Number 1, we can get a sponsor to give out that award. And number 2, I've spoken at quite a few official banquets over the year, whether it be football officials, basketball officials, baseball.
Yep.
We love those guys and girls that are out there officiating, because I'll tell you what, you know, I started doing this high school stuff back in 1990 was the first year, so we're approaching, you know, 30 years right now. There were about 52 or 54 high schools. We got well over 100 high schools now. And when you've got all these different teams and different sports, you got to find people that are going to go out and officiate. And I give all those people, they take a lot of crap on a Wednesday night or a Friday night or whenever they're officiating. But I'll tell you what, if you don't have them, you're not going to have a ball game. And there's great officials. There's some that are good. There's some mediocre. But you know what? They sacrifice, just like the coaches, like the players, and everybody else. Because driving through traffic in our town now is not easy to get to a 3 o'clock ball game if you're umpiring, or a football game if you're trying to get through Friday traffic to get from one end of the county to the other because you've got an assignment for a JV and varsity game. So I salute all the officials in all the sports.
Very well done, Coach. You couldn't have said it any better.
Coach, I want to ask you about some of the men's basketball teams out here, our boys' basketball teams. What are some of the top teams in our county this year?
Well, I think you got to start with Mission Bay. Now, they got beat the other night in a heck of a ball game down there at St. Augustine. St. Augustine got them, and I would imagine St. Augustine, going to be right there at the number one team again this week. But Mission Bay's got that kid, Boogie Ellis, who signed with Krzyzewski and going to go to Duke. He's a heck of a player. But St. Augustine's got a real good team. Torrey Pines has got a real good team. Foothills Christian's got a good ball club. Those are probably the top 4 right now. I think La Jolla Country Day's doing a good job. Santa Fe Christian, they've got a good ball club this year. So there are 5-6 teams that are pretty good. And I think when you get to the end of the year, you're going to in Division One, Division Two, Division Three. There's going to be some pretty good competitive playoffs this year in basketball.
All right, one last thing on officials, Coach, just for laughs.
Okay.
Let's leave basketball officials out of it. The best officials in any high school sport, probably in college too, in my mind, are the guys and gals who do wrestling officiating. Have you ever seen them get down on the mat, the officials, and kind of spin around and then get the hand in there to see if the guy's shoulder is pinned or not? Some of these officials are classic. I mean, honestly, no one out there has ever thought, hey, I'm going to go to a high school wrestling meet. But I'm telling you what, if you want to get some laughs, go out to a good high school wrestling meet sometime and watch some of these officials handle one of those matches, Coach. I don't know even how you describe what these folks have to do to officiate wrestling.
Well, I think one thing, you got to figure out how when the points are being scored, because one guy will think he's getting points, the other guy will say, no, you're not getting points, and the official, you know, wave his arm in the air and say 2 points and point to the scorer's table. You know, I went out to that event here a couple of, I don't know, 5-6 weeks ago that was on the Midway.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
Stanford and Fresno State. I went out there that night. You know, I mean, I don't know much about wrestling, but I thought it was a great event to go to, and I'm glad I went to it, and I'll go to it again next year. But, you know, I would encourage anyone, you know, if you like athletics, you can go and have fun at any of them. But high school wrestling, you know, there's some great wrestlers. I mean, we can talk about Poway and Rancho Bernardo, and those are two of the top programs. Poway's been one of the top programs in the state of California for over 35 years, yeah. And now they've got a new head coach, Wayne Brandstetter, finally hung it up. But his name is on that program. And Rancho Bernardo, we gave it to Nicholas Rizzo today. They got a great program. There are a lot of great programs in this county, wrestling-wise. But you want to do something a little bit different and have some fun, go to a high school wrestling match. I think you'll really enjoy it.
You definitely will enjoy it. And if you don't like the wrestling, like I said, watch the officials. They are hilarious.
Oh, they're good, man. They're dynamic.
Dynamic. Good word, Coach. All right, what's coming up in the high school world in the next couple of weeks? Anything we got to be looking forward to?
Nothing. Just I think next Friday night I'm going to go over my alma mater. I haven't seen Torrey play. They're playing their rival next Friday night, La Costa Canyon. And they're playing a little bit better. I guess they've had a bunch of injuries from what I understand.
That's what Scraby said as an excuse. Scraby was using that. Scraby was using the injuries as an excuse for LCC.
That's what I heard. I've heard that they've had a lot of injuries. They're playing a little bit better, so that's always a fun game. So I'm going to go up there next Friday night. I think I'm going to probably go pick my granddaughter up at volleyball tonight. I'm going to come home and watch the second half of that Lakers game, see if they can get a win on the road up in Utah tonight.
Yes, indeed, Coach. I'll be right there
watching
with you.
You know where I'm going tomorrow night, you guys? You know where I'm going tomorrow night, right?
Where?
I'm going to the Seals game.
Oh, that's right.
Aren't you like the honorary captain tomorrow night?
No, me and my son-in-law, we're going to go down there and take a look at this thing. I'm looking forward to it. I've never seen box lacrosse. So I'm going to go down there, and hopefully they get a good crowd for their first ball game, and we'll have a good time down there tomorrow night.
Nobody supports San Diego sports like Coach John Cantera, and San Diego doesn't support anybody like the Coach John Cantera. So it's a back-and-forth love affair. Coach, great stuff as always. We'll catch up to you next week on the Lolita's High School Report. Thanks.
All righty, guys. Have a great weekend. Thanks.
All right, you Coach. You too. And Coach will be in next week for a couple of programs as well.